call him alcoholic?
I'm alcoholic.
I'm a little shorter than this.
I think you'll be all right.
Okay. Yeah, that's fine.
It picks up pretty good.
Well, I'm kind of a loud mouth, so I'm sure you'll be able to hear me. I want to thank Billy for asking me to come out here. I've been here a couple times with some other people and have always felt welcome, so it's great to be back. And thank my sponsor for taking the road trip out with me and being willing to do that. So I'll tell you all of my stats. So my sobriety date is 6706, and I have a home group, which is Basic Text Big Book Study. It is in Ashland on Saturday mornings at 9 o'clock. So if you guys are there, please feel free to join us. I have a job with that home group, and I am a sponsor. And hopefully what I'm going to do tonight is just tell you a little bit about what it was like and what changed, what happened, and what life is like now. And hopefully I'll get to share a little bit about what it was when I was newly sober and how some things have changed to today. So I guess a little bit about me. I am originally from New York, both the city and the state. I have no accent anymore unless I get really worked up, which can happen. I come from a great family. Parents are still together. I have a West Indian background, which kind of plays into how my upbringing is. And, I had a pretty good life. Now, when I was a child and growing up in my parents' house, I would not have told you that. I would have said that my folks were way stricter than anyone else. I wasn't allowed to do what I wanted to do, and I was very upset about that a good portion of the time and tried to, make grandiose plans to run away with no money, things like that, because I was annoyed. But I really did have a good life, and I think they did the best they knew how. And they are very supportive of what I'm doing in the program today, which is great, because it took me a very long time to disclose to them that I am an alcoholic and I'm, in recovery. So that took a while. Even as a young kid, I always put a ton of pressure on myself. I'm a classic type A perfectionist to a fault. And my parents put some pressure on me too, but I really knew how to turn that up. And I just didn't feel, just never felt comfortable. I was always wound a little too tightly, and that's what I would also have told you was the reason I drank the way I did, was because I was stressed and I was trying to relieve some of that pressure. I just didn't fit in. And some of the things that I'm going to say, I'm not saying from like a bragging perspective, but just to tell you where I came from. I was always told how smart I was, and that I could figure things out. And for a long time, that was what I hung on to, and sometimes can still come back to. I like to analyze, I like to research. I can figure it out on my own. I can pull myself up by my bootstraps. I don't need your help. And because I was smart, I was ahead in school. I got to skip a grade and do higher classes and things like that. So I didn't fit in with the people I was in school with, and I didn't fit in with the people I was supposed to be with. So I was automatically kind of feeling not part of. But I also just didn't ever feel enough. It didn't matter what my parents said or, friends or relatives. I didn't feel smart enough. I didn't feel talented enough. I didn't feel pretty enough. I wasn't, the girl the boys looked at and, wanted to date. I needed that stuff. And I really wanted that. I just wanted to be like everyone else. And I felt like I stuck out a lot of the time. And I would do things like, things that seem really silly, but things that I'm trying to get you to notice me and fit in. I mean, like, someone dared me to, like, staple my finger, and I did it because I was like, oh, okay, they're paying attention to me, or, you know, trying to, like, you know, fail classes and tests so that other people would accept me as not just the smart kid in class. You know, so just things like that. And that kind of continued on through, you know, elementary school. I mean, I was a good kid. I mean, I also really like you to think that I'm following directions. So even though I might want to get out of line or something like that, I'm still going to kind of stay right on the straight and narrow, or at least make you think that I am. You know, so that kind of went along. I changed over from a private school to a public school when I was I went to eighth grade in middle school, which when you're at the tail end of middle school, being the new kid is not fun. And I thought, oh, this is going to be a new start. Nobody knows me. And it was kind of like the second I opened my mouth, it was like same thing all over again. Oh, she's getting labels, you know, as, oh, this is the person we got to watch out for. You know, she's a smart kid. And after a while, it just kind of got to me. I wanted to be something else. You know, so when I was in, finishing up middle school and high school, you know, these two instances happened around the same time in terms of, drinking, but they were both significant. One was I ended up going to a party and, a friend of, and it was a party with, there were some older kids there, who had brought alcohol. My household didn't really have any unless somebody had brought some over. My mother doesn't drink. My father, hardly ever. He had a beer at my wedding. I about fell out because I'd never seen him drink before. It just wasn't around. But, you know, when I was at this party, my friend and I just sort of looked at each other and we were like, hey, that'd be kind of cool. They get to drink. That'd be neat, too. And we, you know, accidentally spilled some into this punch bowl, and then we were able to have something to drink. And I felt like I was just, I could relate with everyone. I, you know, was funnier. Like, it just, I just could feel like I was coming more alive. And, you know, I mean, I didn't really have any consequences from that. I felt pretty horrible the next day. I said I had food poisoning and stayed home from church. But that was about it. And I was like, how can we do that again? That was amazing. I want to do that again. And then, you know, like I said, our house really didn't have any alcohol unless someone gave it to us. And there was a bottle from like a wedding that my folks had way up on some shelf. And I was at home by myself and I drank some of it. And so I realized that even when I wasn't around other people, I could relax. And I desperately wanted to relax. I felt like I wasn't relaxed like a good portion of the time. And I also just didn't feel like I ever really had control over my emotions. Like my parents were very, you know, why are you crying? I was always like, something's wrong. Why are you always crying? What's going on? I was very emotional. My brother was kind of like, tell it like it is, very blunt, not get caught up in that. And I felt like when I drank, I could kind of like calm myself down. So those were things that I just kind of filed away, and I wanted that feeling. I wanted that feeling. So I would, you know, start doing things like making sure that I hung out with my friends and their older siblings who could get access to alcohol, and, you know, started to ramp up some of the lies that I would tell my parents about what was going on. And, you know, I mean, they believed me a good portion of the time because they really didn't have any reason not to. You know, I had, like, this little jar that I kept in the back of my closet that I'd fill up with, you know, clear alcohol every now and then, and, like, kind of sip on that. And so I kind of, you know, just did some of that partying things. I did some ridiculous stuff. Like, we were going on this trip with Drunk Whore, and they said they were going to check all of our bags for things. So I emptied out, like, a shampoo bottle and, like, put alcohol in, which, by the way, I wouldn't recommend because, you know, could be soapy. Like, that's not... wasn't the greatest, but I still got to have some. So, you know, stuff like that. And so that kept going on, and it started getting worse senior year. I was still doing fine with, like, all my classes. I was able to maintain drinking for a really long time. And so I'm still doing fine. But, you know, my friends did start noticing, you know, just something was a little off. And, you know, they started, a couple of them started talking to a couple of teachers who, you know, were just trying to check in with me, see how I was doing. And then later in my senior year, I, you know, like I said, I'd put a lot of pressure on myself, and I was really near the top of my class, and I was like second in my class, and I had slipped down to third in my class, and for whatever reason, I couldn't take that. Like, I just took all of the emotions that had been bottled up, and I wanted to check out, and so I actually tried to commit suicide. And you know, I ended up telling a friend what I did, and, you know, he talked to my parents and the guidance counselor and all that, which I'm, today I'm, of course, very grateful. At the time, I was pissed at him. But I, you know, that kind of put a stop on my drinking for a little while, because my parents found out a whole bunch of things that I'd been doing. You know, so they put me in therapy for a little while, and, you know, it didn't necessarily help all that much, but I got to talk about myself, which I like doing, and I got to talk about my feelings and let's analyze those and, you know, what seems to be the trouble here. So, you know, I got to go through a lot of that, and, you know, it seemed to calm down for a little while until I went to college, and I applied to quite a number of schools, and I picked my choice on the one farthest away from home. Which, because I could do whatever I wanted there. So I went to U of R, and, my first week there, I saw, the girl next door to me in the dorm. She was taken out for alcohol poisoning. And I was like, oh my gosh, what is wrong with her? How could that happen? And that same week, while I was not taken to the hospital, I ended up on another campus with boys that I had just met, boys I hadn't met until that night. And I always pride myself for being able to, like, drink like a champ, and I could drink guys under the table. So I was very competitive. And I ended up being there and waking up in other clothes and you know, nothing. I found out they didn't do anything to me, which was just God's grace. That doesn't happen. But, you know, I'd gotten sick and, you know, like all that stuff. And I would always, you know, oh my gosh, like, not that I'm never going to do it again, but I'm going to figure out a better way to do it for the next time. So I can not have that unfortunate circumstance happen. Like, that's embarrassing. Let's not have that happen again. How can you fix it? You know, so freshman year, I kind of partied some, and then it calmed down a little bit, sophomore and junior year, or I feel like maybe I had worked out all of the kinks of the drinking and figured out what worked and what didn't, you know, and then I kind of, you know, went out with a bang senior year. And again, I did really well with keeping the grades up, keeping all the activities going. I'm very involved. But at the same time, I felt like I was searching for something. You know, I had grown up, you know, we were at church more often than we weren't, Christian household, and I really, like, when I was kind of going off to college, I really just said, you know what, I want to do whatever I want to do. I've seen enough hypocrisy in the church. I was over it. I wouldn't have my parents breathing down my neck, and I just wanted to find my own way. But at the same time, I felt like there was some sort of emptiness, and I couldn't put my finger on what it was, you know. And I mean, I tried joining different groups. I tried, you know, going off to youth things for a while, different churches, and some of it helped a little bit, but I still kind of felt like I was back doing the same thing that I did. And it's not that I wanted to stop, but I knew that there was something else that should be going on. So, you know, finished up college, and that went well. And so then I'm out in the real world. And for most of my life, I've been a teacher, and which is a pretty intense job. And it's a job that you do even when you're not at your job. And I immediately was able to find people that drank like me, or at least I thought they drank like me, like within the first day. And, you know, people who were like, oh, we're done with our first day, we're going to happy hour. Yes, I'm there. I'm your girl. So I was very happy to find those people right away. And I was one of the few who didn't really live by school, so I lived maybe about a half hour away. And I would do things like, you know, I'd get home and I'd get a phone call, hey, we're going out, and I would drop my things and go right back out. Because I still really, I didn't want to miss out on anything. I always felt like there was something going on and I needed to be a part of that. I remember when I was in college, I'd get really antsy around like 9 o'clock or so if I didn't have any plans. Because I really needed to be doing something. And I don't like, my sponsor will test this, I don't like quiet. I don't like to sit with my thoughts and myself. So if I'm always busy and doing something, then I don't have to do that. And alcohol calms that down, too. So the drinking kind of continued. And shortly after I started teaching, I met this wonderful man who is actually my husband now. And he... You know, I thought he drank like I did too. He does not. But I really thought he did, and at least at the time he did. So we had, I was like, yes, this is great. Now I have someone who likes me too, wants to be with me, and drinks, then we're going to have fun. So, you know, the two of us would love to entertain, and we'd put on parties, and I'd always be a bartender, and I'd have like elaborate drink menus because the only thing I really didn't drink was beer, but I was like classy girl, so I would like drink up, you know, make all the mixed drinks for everybody. So I'd have that, and you know, usually I'd be the classy girl, like, you know, on the floor later. But at the beginning, it was fine. So I got to meet some more friends there, and you know what I noticed as time went on is that. My standards just got lower and lower. Like, what used to be unacceptable became acceptable, and it would I would just think that I just changed my mind on things, and you know, but it really wasn't the case. Once I have alcoholism, so like once I have that drink in me, then you know I. don't have that choice anymore. And I can't predict what's going to happen. I could be fine and have 8 drinks, no problem. I could have 2 drinks and be on the floor and not be able to tell you what happened because I blacked out. You know, like, it just wasn't getting to be predictable anymore. And right before we're going to get married, I decided that, you know what? It isn't really enough that this man loves me and wants to spend the rest of his life with me. I want to kind of explore and see what else is out there. So I did that because I'm, you know, when I drink, I seek more affection and I, you know, want you to notice me and I also want you to buy me drinks so, you know, I can do whatever I need to do to get that. And so I did, and my standards just kept getting lower and lower and lower, and, you know, you would have thought that would have made me put the brakes on the wedding or anything like that, but it didn't. It was kind of like, okay, you know, maybe I just got that out of my system and we're fine. But when I got married, I think I just, I started being even more critical of myself and being like, I'm not going to be a great wife. Why bother try? I'm not going to be like how my mom was and be able to be Susie Homemaker and keep the house clean. Why bother try? I'm going to do what I want to do. And I had that selfish attitude that has followed me around all my life. And that's where everything really took off. I could blame it on circumstances that were, you know, happening right then. But really, I just used that as an excuse to drink. I mean, like my husband had a job that he spent with very long hours at the time, and I took that to mean I didn't have to check in with anyone or get any permission to do anything I wanted to do. So I could go and I could drink and stay out till all hours of the night and not be accountable for anything. And so, you know, that just kept going on. And, you know, I wasn't really trying to hide the drinking part. I was trying to hide all the other stuff I was doing when I was drinking. Because my husband knew I drank, you know, so, you know, that was fine. Like, he'd see me, you know, at home and being like, I need you to come help me. I've spilled wine on myself again because I fell asleep, which I now know means you passed out. But, you know, and he'd do that and clean it up. And, you know, he didn't like when I drove drunk. That was his big thing. He did not want me to drive drunk. And I kind of was like, you are overreacting. It is just 10 minutes away. What is the problem? You know, and also I really just hadn't, I didn't have any of those big on paper consequences. I didn't have any of that stuff. And maybe if that happened, maybe I would have stopped earlier. I don't know. Maybe it wouldn't have. But I didn't have that. I just was trying to keep all, you know, the facade going with everything that I was doing. You know, it was kind of one of those things like, kind of like how a duck is, like really calm on the surface and paddling really fast underneath. So that's how I was and how I felt. And I didn't have anything that had been taken away from me. Like, I still had the job, still had the house, barely hanging on to the husband, but had that. But I was dying inside. Like, I was getting to the point of every day, I'm just like, why am I waking up? Like, what is the point? I was just really depressed. I was having thoughts of suicide again, but I was like, I can't, you know, I wasn't able to pull it off the first time. What if I don't this second time around? So I was really, I didn't know I had alcoholism. I'd never really seen that, or what that looked like. I mean, I had a couple of just vague ideas, basically from like television shows, but like I really didn't have anything to, you know, to grab onto in terms of what that looked like. So I mean, I was just more like, I'm drinking because of my circumstances, not because of a condition that I have. So you know, that kind of went on, and then I had a friend who is still one of my good friends to this day, and her husband is an alcoholic, and he's been in the room some. And she had kind of gotten to the point of being like, I'm not going to cover for you anymore. I'm not going to lie for you anymore. You know, which I was like, all right, well, I'll go hang out with these people who will. It's fine. You know, you are overreacting. And I knew her husband didn't drink, which I thought was weird. But I didn't know he was an alcoholic. And she got to the point where she said, you know what? I think you have a real problem. I think you may be an alcoholic. And I was like, oh, all right, well, I'm going to show you that I'm not an alcoholic. And then I went on, like, this incredible night of I don't know what. I drank way too much. Have no idea how much I drank. I was driving home, and I was tired, so I called her and said, I'm tired, I just want to swing by your house so I can rest for a minute. And she was like, okay. And so I got to her house, and she and her husband took my keys, and he was like, you're a drunk, and you're not going anywhere. And I'm very, like, lighthearted and affectionate when I've been drinking, and I'm usually not angry, and I was really angry. And was trying to, you know, get physical with him, but basically he wasn't having it. I stayed over there the night, and they ended up, you know, calling my husband and letting him know where I was and everything like that. But the next day when I went home, I tried to act like nothing had happened. I mean, I slipped into bed in the morning because my goal was always get home, and that was like the first time I hadn't gotten home. I was always, you know, trying to do that. And so, you know, I started making up some elaborate story to my husband, and he was like, yeah, Nicole, they've called and left multiple messages for me, so we can talk about this later. I'm not buying any of it. I was like, oh, all right. well, that's a problem, but I'm not going to deal with that now. I mean, I'll deal with it later. Come to find out later on, he met up with our two friends, and they kind of gave him the rundown on alcoholism and what AA is about, and, you know, it could possibly help me. And I didn't know where he had gone, but when I found out where he was, I was mad, and by the time he got back to the house, I was packing because I was going to leave. And he said, will you just please try? Just try going to a meeting or two. You know, they think this might be good for you. Just try it out. And I was like, well, if it'll get you off my back, I'll give it a try. That's fine. But at the same time, I was out of, like, ideas. I didn't know what to do with myself anymore. And I was kind of like, all right, we'll see what, you know, this AA group can do. So I went to a meeting. The guy that's our friend took me to my first meeting. And I didn't pick up a white tip or anything that night, and I don't really remember a whole lot. I remember, you know, there being kind of a variety of people, like how it is here, and that was surprising to me. And I remember just hearing some of the different feelings that people were saying and being like, huh, I've felt like that too. I felt like I didn't really fit in. I felt like my head was loud and I couldn't get it to be quiet. I was like, oh, and I hadn't really heard other people say that before. So I was like, that's kind of interesting. You know, so I talked more with my friend afterwards about meetings in general and what the program's like, and you know, and he kind of really emphasized the whole, like, one day at a time thing, you know, like, you know, like, you are out of any good ideas that you have, so if you just try this one day at a time, you know, you can see that there could be something different. He also introduced me to my first sponsor, who I'd really met before in another group that was in the church where we had that meeting. My friends had kind of tried to get me in the back door, and they had, like, pushed me into this group that was reading some Emmett Fox books, and so my sponsor actually happened to be a woman that was in that group. You know, that was very nerve-wracking for me to try to trust someone and try to open up about my drinking, because I had kept it to myself for so long, or I tried to do that for so long. But she, you know, she's still to this day, I'm friends with her, and she's part of our home group, and she just has a very gentle, kind spirit, you know, and she met me where I was. You know, we had a lot of commonalities, drinking and otherwise, and that was helpful. You know, so I don't think I was necessarily going into the program, like, full speed ahead, but I at least was, like, willing to see that there could be something different. And it took me a while to admit that I was an alcoholic, too. I mean, I saw the first step, and I was kind of like, I don't know, like, powerless over alcohol? Being powerless over something, that's a pretty strong word. I don't know about that. Like, maybe having some bad days, maybe. But powerless, I mean, let's be real here. So that was a little difficult. I mean, I was actually more willing to say that my life was unmanageable because of the way I felt. I felt like I couldn't manage it. And I had always been able to manage and control my life, and I felt like it wasn't, even if on paper it didn't look that way. So that took me a while. I mean, like, I would always sort of be like, I'm Nicole, and I'm here because I might be crazy, I don't know. I'm Nicole, and I may have some problems sometimes with drinking, but, like, I couldn't bring myself to say it until I believed it, until I actually accepted it. And she was very patient with me on that, too. I mean, also, I was 28 when I started coming, and I didn't know what other people my age did. I was like, oh, isn't this what everyone does? Don't we just all go get wasted and that's it? And she's like, no. there are other things that you can do. And I was like, oh, all right, I don't know what those are. So she was really, really patient with me. You know, so I and she started taking me through through the steps. And, you know, at that time, I had admitted I was an alcoholic, but I wasn't really willing to give up all of that control yet. And so I was still kind of questioning and still trying to kind of figure things out myself. And, you know, and I worked with her for a while, and then I bounced around to a couple other people. And then this one sponsor, she had some other things going on in her life personally, and she wasn't able to sponsor me anymore. And so then I went through a period of time where I was here, but I wasn't sponsored, which I do not recommend, because I was definitely a dry drunk. I was barely hanging on. I think I did maybe a meeting a week where I'd come in and cry in the corner. And, you know, if I did say anything, it was just to kind of, like, just vomit out all my problems to you. And I'm not really getting a solution. I just want to tell you how I'm feeling, and that's it. You know, so I felt like I was worse than when I was drinking, because now I felt like I had no coping mechanism. And I was just hanging on and not drinking. After a little while, I actually re-met the person who's my sponsor now, and she's always said, I can't believe you didn't drink after all that time, because I thought you would have. And I think by that point I was like hit kind of another level and was like, I gotta do something. I gotta figure out, like, I gotta get some help. Like, I'm here, but I don't know what I'm doing. I mean, I've tried to help myself. Like, the first week I had come into AA, I, like, got a big book, read it cover to cover myself, was like, check, I'm done. I can help myself because I've read the big book. But I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. And all I'm doing is buying out self-help books in Barnes & Noble, trying to find my happiness, and it's not working. And so I need some structure, and I need some guidance, I need some direction, and I might not like it, but that's what I need, you know, and she was like, great, let's go, you know, so she started taking me through the steps, we started over, and, you know, it's been quite a journey. I mean, I think that's where I can see I really started to, really be a part of this program, you know, something I've been wanting to be a part of for so long with other people, and I started to really feel like I was a member, instead of just someone who was kind of on the outside edges. She taught me the importance of not being so turned inward. Like, that's great, you have stuff going on, everyone else does too, go find out about what's going on with them. You know, and I was like, how is that helpful to me? I do not understand. This does not make sense. How is my calling some other woman going to help me? She's like, just do it anyway. You don't understand. Just do it. You know, so I would. And you know what? During a phone conversation, I wouldn't think about myself for like a hot second. And that was good. You know, it's like, it's tiring. It's tiring thinking about yourself all the time. And I would not have told you that I was, like, a selfish person. I would have said, I'm very kind and loving, and I want the best for you. And you know, sometimes that's true. But sometimes there's, I want to look good, so I'm going to show you that I'm really helping you, but I want to look good. So she taught me, you know, the importance of just helping other people, whether it's, you know, shaking their hand and greeting, getting to a meeting early. Oh, I did not like getting to meetings early. Did not like that. Because I was like, I'm going to get there, and I'm not going to know anybody, and they're going to be like, why is that girl sitting by herself? She's a dork. She has no friends. I'm like, the whole thing. So I, like, blood in. I was good for an after time. I'm like, afterwards we're good. But, like, did not like that. But, so I got more comfortable, you know, talking to other people, finding out what's going on with them. She's heavily involved in service. She taught me the importance of service. That's important to be accountable. You know, people rely on you. Like, if you just don't show up and, you know, for something, people are like, I mean, someone else will do it, but, you know, they're going to be like, hey, where's Nicole? She's supposed to do this job. You know, so I've been fortunate enough to do service for my home group and also at the district level. I'm actually about to rotate out of GSR, which has been, I mean, it's been a great experience. I've also been our district secretary, so I've got to go to a few assemblies and things like that. And that's a wonderful experience just to see AA on those levels, just to see how you can get a whole bunch of drunks in a room and things still get done. It's great. It's really great to see that. It's been a journey though. And, just because you get sober and you have a program does not mean your life is perfect. And it doesn't mean your life is all sunshine and roses. I've gone through some very challenging things in sobriety. I was 9 months sober, and my brother was suddenly killed, motorcycle accident. He was taken just like that. And the only thing that got me through was knowing that I could call these women and talk to them, even if I didn't really know what I wanted to say. And it was hard because it was a time where I still was still pretty distant from God. I wasn't relying on, you know, God like more I am today. But I'm very glad that I was sober for that and that I could be there for my family during that time, as painful as it was. There's been countless other times. I'll tell you, the past 2.5 years have probably been less like a roller coaster of things happening one right after the other. I've gone through, several years of infertility, dealing with that. My husband's parents recently both just passed away within 2 months of each other. Gone through that. Gone through job changes. He's lost his job. We've both found new jobs. A lot of different things. But I did not have to drink over any of that. There have been times when I, especially if there's been times when I have not been working this program as strenuously as I should be, that I've thought to myself, hey, you know, I don't necessarily want to drink, but I want to just relax again. And I don't know what else does that other than drinking. I've tried other things. I've tried work. I've tried relationships. I've tried sex. I've tried lots of different things. But I know that alcohol will do that, but I also know where it will take me. And I'm not willing to do that. So as tough as it is sometimes, I do the things I don't necessarily always want to do. And hopefully in doing so, I can help someone else along the way. I'm currently going through the steps again, which is sometimes it's like I'm coming back to the same things I keep hitting, like when I was like, brand new. I'm like, I should know better, but you are where you are, and that's okay. So things that I thought I kind of had down, like trusting in God and giving up control. Those are some of the things that are like really in my face right now. I love the part in the big book about with the third step. That's the actor and trying to play all the different roles, and especially because I actually do acting, and so I've done that literally, like tried to act and tried to do the lights and tried to do the music and everything like that. I've literally done that, and I've done it in my own life, and it's like I want to hold on so tightly, and I know if I let go, it'll be okay. I will still exist. Everything will be fine. But I just want to do it myself, and it's so hard sometimes to do that. I do not have as high a tolerance for pain as I used to, which is probably good, but I am just stubborn. I'm just so stubborn sometimes, and I just, And I know what truths are that I need to face, and I just don't want to face them. So God's like, that's all right. I'll be here when you're ready. You know? So you know, just having to face some things like that, and, you know, I'm doing another fourth step right now, and looking at some things that have come up again, and some new things that, or some things that are showing in a different way. And that's really interesting to go through, too. I've had the experience of being able to make amends to some people, and that's been great. You know, of course, when I first stopped drinking, I don't like people to be mad at me. So I just was like, I'm sorry you're mad at me, and don't do that anymore. You know, and it really wasn't an apology at all. And, I mean, especially when I tried to, like, do that to my friend who's an alcoholic. He was like, I'm not really buying that. So I went through the steps and was able to get to that place of seeing what I'd done wrong and being able to put a name on it and being able to say, I was wrong. That is a huge one for me. My husband's like, you never used to say that. So it's kind of cool that you say that you're wrong now. And so, I mean, it's, and having to do different types of amends too, was also interesting. I mean, I did an amends at my brother's graveside. I wrote him a letter, and then I just read it to him, and I let him know, like, things that I was wrong for, like, you know, driving him around when I was drunk, not being able to be there for his graduation because I was so hungover. I was there physically, but I wasn't there, you know, at all. And just being able to make that kind of amends when a person is not there anymore. I've made amends to my parents, which was like, ooh, I did not see that one coming. Because they live in New York still, so I was always under the impression that I really didn't do a whole lot of harm to them because I didn't drink around them or they didn't catch me drinking around them, you know, and they were like, you know, they said things like, you know, Nicole, when we visit you, we feel like we're on eggshells all the time. And it's, you know, we love you because you're our daughter, but sometimes we really don't like you. And that was really hard to hear your parents say that. But, you know, I'm glad that they were open and honest and able to tell me that because it just made me even more aware of how I had harmed them. And, you know, today our relationship, you know, my mom and I have always had a really good one. My dad and I, sometimes it's a struggle, but it's definitely different. It's definitely different than it used to be. And, you know, they say they love coming to visit now. And we've had fun together, which has been great. And I also am not, you know, I can be very open and honest with them. I can say, hey, you know, I'm going to my Monday night meeting. I'll call you when I'm done. And, like, you know, my mom, she, like, counts on that. She's like, oh, hey, I know I won't talk to you from this time because you're at your meeting, right? Yeah, Mom, I'm at my meeting. Like, she knows. So that's really cool that I can do that. I've even been able to make financial amends with my husband, and I didn't really know how that was going to work out because I was like, we have the same bank account. How do you make amends to someone that you share an account with? And I was given direction to, you know, pray for the amount of money that I thought I owed him because I didn't physically go take any money from his wallet, I manipulated money a lot. I would say I needed, you know, $50 and I really only needed $20 and I took the rest and went out and prayed, you know, things like that. So I was told to pray. And a number came to me, and I was like, really? Okay. And so I told him about it and said, you know, I've prayed on this, and as part of my amends, I want to be able to have you take money each week and just have money be for you until we get to this amount. It's not money you're going to spend on me. We're not going out to dinner. It's just for you to do whatever you want. And I thought he'd turn me down, but he didn't. He said, well, I want to help you. So, all right, that's fine. So I did that, you know, and that was painful, but, you know, I did that, and I, you know, and I mean, man, money's a tough one, isn't it? Ugh. I mean, we still can kind of go rounds on money, but I am willing to be a participant in my marriage, and I'm willing to be like, okay, this is my opinion about this. This is your opinion about this. Let's come together and see what we can figure out about this. You know, I don't want to be a taker anymore. I want to contribute. So that's been really great. I've also really enjoyed being a sponsor too. I was way nervous the first time someone asked me, and I was like, really? Why? But I was told that you have experience. Even if you don't have the exact same circumstances as this woman, you can help her. And it's not, once again, it's one of those things, it's like, just shows how powerless I really am over someone else's sobriety too. Like, I can't make someone be sober. I can't make them say they're an alcoholic. They have to realize that themselves. If if somebody is willing to put in the work and do it. I mean, it's a very simple program, but it's hard. It's not easy. If there's something easier out there, I'm gonna go ahead and do it. So I just kind of put that out there, and I sponsor women the same way that I was sponsored. And some of them, I don't know what's happened to them. Some of them I still see occasionally, and I'm actually sponsoring someone right now who's amazing. And I'm kind of like, oh my gosh, she's doing everything I've asked her to do. I don't really know what to do with that. but it's awesome. It's like somebody who's like right in there and, wants what we have. So that's really cool too. And again, you know, it's helping keep me sober too and keep me right-sized too. So I don't know. I mean, I think this continues to just be an experience, and I really, my relationship with God has changed over the years too. I used to be very rigid in terms of my thinking with that, and that I could, like, if I prayed, it had to be a big flowery prayer. I had to have all the right words, and I've learned that it can just be a conversation, and I can also just have the quiet time to listen to what God has to say. I've gotten more comfortable with being quiet. It used to drive me insane when I first was sober, but it's a little better now. And I've also had times when I've just been mad at God, and I was like, I don't want to pray. I don't want to talk to God. But I've also been told that God can handle that. God can handle if I'm angry, and I can say that. And He's going to still love me, and that's been a wonderful thing to really come to embrace. I guess with closing, I'll just say that, you know, I don't do this perfectly at all, but I'm willing to keep putting one foot in front of the other, even if my feelings don't necessarily match up with that. If I just keep following the direction, then, I'm going to be okay. I have people who I care about, and they care about me, and I have a God that loves me and wants to be there for me too. So I'm really, really grateful for everything that this program has given me. So that's fantastic. Thank you.